Hello, Mike.
Hello, John.
I'm John.
I'm Mike.
And you're listening to All Yesterday's Parties.
Yes! Good Lord.
I remember how it worked.
Yay!
Hoorah!
We picked it up like we'd never dropped it.
Yes, heavily. How have you been, Mike? It's been a long time since we've done these.
It has been a long time, yeah. I've been doing well, John. I've been doing well. I was mostly enjoying the weather for the week. Mm. You know, I mean, we've had several days. You know, it's been... You're right, John. That can get a bit lively for you, there, mate.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, we've had several days where it's been absolutely roasting. And now we've just come to recording and it's absolutely slashing down.
Yay!
Yay! It's brilliant British weather that we have.
These days.
Down by the bins.
Down by the bins.
How have you been, John?
Not bad. Kept myself busy.
Good. This has immediately got depressing. Let's pick things up a bit.
Yes.
Because we're just two door farty old men. But in our door...
Less of the farty you.
In our door farty old room, we've invited a vibrant new guest.
We'd like to welcome Emily Rose Galvin is with us.
Hiya.
Hello.
Great build up there.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out of our busy schedule.
You're very welcome. Yeah. And I am on a time limit for one of our gigs later.
So yeah.
That's cool.
Ah, yes. Full disclosure here. John and Emily are part of a musical endeavour.
We are.
Tell us about it, if you want. You
know. Go ahead, John.
Okay. This afternoon is kind of like a Venn diagram of things that I do.
Sleeping, eating, crying.
Not necessarily in that order. We're recording in King Street, and in this very place in January, Emily and I were introduced by Chris Wilson of Bottlecraft. And we got on like a house on fire, had a giggle. And then Emily was asked to perform some poetry. Emily is Staffordshire's Poet Laureate. I really feel like I should have led with that.
It's okay, because not for much longer. So people need to learn now to not say it.
Yes.
Because I don't want to have to correct people and say not anymore.
Yeah.
How much longer for?
What month are we in? Basically August. So August, so about 2 months, beginning of October.
Okay.
Mm. I'll cry if I talk about it.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
And I've got to update the website then.
Oh, poor you.
I know.
Devastating news.
Will nobody think of the Johns? Emily got in touch with me and said, how would you fancy coming up with some musical arrangements? Because it was the Honey Box that is recorded here that it was about to be performed on. Mm-hmm. At the time, you were supposed to be on the same bill as two metal bands.
Yes, I was. I mean, that changed, but even so...
It did change.
The point still stood that, just one woman's words... don't stand up quite so well to raging bands.
It really feels like commentary on social media suddenly. You go like, one woman's words to the raging noise of all the men.
I'm about to break into a rant.
Yeah. I might actually still update the website with that.
Yes.
I'm glad we're recording this. So I came up with some music and Emily didn't hate it, which is... good criteria.
Always a bonus.
Always a first.
Yeah.
Slipping the subtle shade in. I'm getting back in the saddle.
You haven't insulted me for quite some time.
It's true, yeah.
We did the performance and just really, really liked what we were doing. Didn't really want to have that as just a one-off. And here we are. We are now Rose and Cloud. Mm-hmm. And... I've got no clue when this is getting released, but our first EP comes out this Thursday, which is the 1st of August.
Very soon.
So either you're listening to this and thinking, ooh, I might just get that when it comes out, or...
It's already out. I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, more likely the second, to be honest. Since we recorded a couple of episodes, like, before Infinity War came out. So everything we talked about in that is now just...
completely redundant.
Ancient. Yeah.
So yeah. So in that vein,
not the Avengers vein. No. Immediately throwing that aside.
In that case, I'll put the suit away.
Please.
You're not Black Widow, John.
But I like the chafing.
Oh, that sound of regret.
I know him. So, this week we are going to do a thing, which is a format that was, I think this was suggested by Gary Wilcox.
It was.
So we took that and ran with it. Mike and I have recorded two episodes where we've done an autophonography on each other.
Okay.
Autophonography, that's correct.
Yeah. However, I have somehow not released them.
Yes.
Is it because you got the name wrong every time?
Yes. That's at least part of it.
Yes. Yeah.
I think what we might do is knock them both out as kind of one bumper crop before doing this one.
Okay. So if you're listening to this now, you will have just enjoyed the bumper crop of Mike and I's autophonographies previous to this.
Or maybe not. I mean, we don't know.
No.
We have no idea what we're doing. I don't know.
We're not
going to
prescribe an order on this.
No, no, no.
Whatever you want.
No. Do you think we are fascists? Yeah, I'll just do this.
Don't look at me, John. Ever. So anyway, yes, let's dive straight into the autophonography.
Let's do this.
Now, the first kind of question involves kind of something that's a bit more out of your control.
Yes, this is the question that I like because I don't have to think about anything.
Beautiful, excellent. It's the song that was number one when you were born.
Okay.
Yes.
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 I don't know it, do you know it?
I don't know what your birthday is. But does John?
Oh, John, test time.
Okay. Oh.
I know it's November.
Yep. I don't know why I'm looking at you as if I'm sort of passing the information to you. 17th.
I nearly said 12th. That's my dad's birthday.
That's close enough.
Mm. That is quite close. So let's find out then what was number one when you were born.
Maths. I'm going to be 30 this year.
Oh, Lord.
I could have just done this. My phone's right here.
Yeah, but it's more fun to make John struggle.
So much more.
Look at him. Don't cut any of this.
There's the episode title. It's much more fun to make John struggle.
Yeah. Look at him.
The suspense is killing me.
I know. And me.
Also, I'm sure I've heard it before and it's something really nice.
It's not really fun if it's something cool, to be honest.
Lisa Stansfield, All Around the World.
Oh, that was
It could have been a lot worse, to be fair.
It could have been a lot better. I remember doing this, and my sister's, number one when she was born, was Twist and Shout by Chakademus and Pliers.
Wow.
That's so much better.
For some value of better, I suppose.
I am so jealous that that's what she gets to say. I love that song. We can listen to that instead.
We could listen to that instead. I know mine was really close to being One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus. But luckily, it was Video Kill the Radio Star.
Again, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Notable.
And I was sat right between Bright Eyes by Art Garfunkel and, I know, right, straight immediate goosebumps, and Sunday Girl by Blondie.
Wow.
Like smack between the two of them.
There's no bad...
Nothing bad in there. No. I love them both. Oh. As I'm sure I mentioned in that original recording.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, putting that aside, obviously you had no control over that.
No.
That was just what happened. Well, it's what the British public decided was going to, on your behalf.
Thanks,
guys. It's no Boaty McBoat face, is it?
But yeah, what kind of music did you hear when you were growing up?
I'm getting my notes out. I thought about this.
Oh, it's notes on.
So
Noty McNote face.
I like it. I'm keeping that one. I was really lucky. My parents were really cool. So from my dad, I got a kind of, I guess, late 70s, early 80s rock vibe. And then a lot of the kind of post-punkiness from him. Mainly the Smiths I got from my dad. Which will keep just popping up throughout this whole thing. I think the minute I turned 13, my dad came in with like a box of vinyl mostly Smith's albums and was just like, you're a teenager now. You'll like these. Yeah, and I did. Mom was Elton John, which I hated at the time. Didn't really get on with him at all. And it's only sort of, I think, as I got older, and I guess as I explored more of his back catalogue, I found myself ironing one day and singing along to Yellow Brick Road, and I was like, oh no, I've turned into my mom.
It's good housework music.
It really is.
Good ironing music.
It's great ironing music. Yeah, my mum used to do it, ironing with one hand, tambourine in the other hand.
Banging a bass drum with a foot.
yes, absolutely. She was just one of them.
I've seen
one
that show at the Fringe.
Yeah, she loves it, that Beatles as well, I got from my mum. And then more folky stuff. Joni Mitchell. Then it all kind of went a bit soft, like James Taylor and stuff like that, which is fine, but not something I took forward with me into later. Yeah.
It's only you're getting just a little bit of kind of a mild hippie goth upbringing.
I think so. Yeah. They sort of gave me the groundwork to go down whatever cliche I chose to go.
Yeah.
Which I did. I just chose them all on different days.
Well, in that case, shall we find out with important question number two, the first album / single you ever bought?
Oh, now
which cliche did you go down?
This is a really tricky one because I remember. I know it's sacrilege. It's sacrilege. But because I basically had all of my music given to me on a plate, I don't remember ever kind of listening to the radio and being like, "Oh, I'll go and get that." I remember buying Daydream in Blue, Eye Monster, the single. I remember buying Tainted Love by Marilyn Manson, the single.
Excellent.
I think the first album I bought myself might have been OK Computer. Mm. But I wasn't going for kind of music that was around at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of now got my influences in and was going back through back catalogues. I also didn't buy a lot of albums, so I went to the library.
Yeah,
and got the CDs for £1 and then ripped them. Don't do that, kids.
No,
home taping is killing music, children.
Also, a lot of libraries' music departments are getting shut down, so there's not much.
Yeah, see, I got Nevermind by Nirvana from the library, and I was just like, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah,
but okay, that's fine by me.
So, about what kind of age would you have been when you were plundering the library for Radiohead and Nirvana?
12, maybe. Yeah.
I felt my bones creak. Oh, I'm so old.
Yeah. But going to these kind of things, like 90s music, really, really late. Because I wasn't really interested in what was in the charts that much. The first album I was bought, my parents bought me Sgt. Pepper when I was maybe 9 or 10. Something like that. So it had always just been that kind of, I know that this older music is better than whatever. Saying that, I did have the Spice Girls on tape. Again, ripped.
Yeah.
So Spice Girls was my only modern music.
I think if you're going to choose any kind of pop act from that era, then goddamn Spice Girls, they knocked out some cracking tunes.
Oh, they were perfect.
To be fair.
Yeah.
They were perfect.
They were better. Yeah. What else? Steps? No, wasn't into Steps. Spice Girls hit it. Right on the hand, on the head, on the nail.
Both of them,
all of them.
That
at the
nail,
same time.
They took it, put it on the head, and then they just went bang.
Yeah.
Exactly like that. Yeah. That's what the Spice, all of them, all five of them consecutively.
Yeah.
Okay, important sub question to bit 2A.
Mm-hmm.
Favourite Spice Girl?
Favourite Spice Girl now, or my favourite while I was growing up?
Just both.
Oh, do you know what? I liked Scary. I think I still do now.
Okay.
I think I'm the only person whose answer will ever be Scary, but I liked her. She was bolshy. Mm. She was bolshy in a non in your face way. She was the most in your face one. But like Ginger was a little bit too sultry for me. I didn't really dig that. Scary was just badass.
Cool.
And I wanted her hair.
Actually, fuck it. Let's make it a round table, John.
Same. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Really?
No way. You're the first person I've ever met. Right, I'm cheersing you.
Clink. There we
go.
That's amazing.
That's
a perfect moment. Hold there. You're drinking...
Duchesse.
Oh, Duchesse de Bourgogne. Beautiful, beautiful beer. What are you drinking, John?
I'm drinking Neon Raptor Skeleton Fever.
Excellent. And I'm drinking the Citra Equinox Pale Ale by Polly's Brewco. Formerly Loca Polly. And it's very, very good.
There we go.
Just quickly do that.
Of the five of them, she was the only one that had a proper personality that actually didn't, it actually felt like hers, if that makes sense.
I know what you mean. I liked her accent as well.
Yeah.
she was like proper. Was she from Bradford?
Bolton?
Yeah, she's that kind of area. That,
yeah.
Yeah, so she reminded me of my family.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they are less scary.
I must say.
They still wear a leopard print now.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad. While my mum's doing the ironing and playing the tambourine to Elton John.
Awesome. I must say, I really was a cliche. I liked Ginger when I was a teenager because I was a horny boy. But these days, I actually prefer Sporty.
Sporty had the best voice.
Some of the solo stuff she did was absolutely pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, like the one she did with Bryan Adams.
And
that was decent.
I loved that.
With Lisa Left Eye Lopez as well. Never be the same again.
Yes, that was a solid gold banger. That mm-hmm. So that was beautiful. Yeah, piece of music.
Wow. And that has just popped into my mind unbidden.
I was literally about to say it, but I'd forgotten that Left Eye was involved.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten it existed.
Great yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, Victoria's with Dane Bowers was the one.
Pop Music Hall of Fame.
Yes, yeah. It was. I mean, this is going to make you guys feel old as well. I remember that being like Single Wars. It was that and what, Groove Jet with Sophia Spexter, that who was going to get to number one. It was like the Blur and Oasis of my time.
Wow. I can remember Spiller.
Mm. I cannot remember the other one. No. To be honest.
Wow.
Yeah, Groove Jet was
and,
great.
I mean, we used to sit at home watching... what was it called? The Box, which was like a music TV channel where it was like a video jukebox because people would text in what song they wanted, which did mean that sometimes you got Martin McCutcheon's Perfect Moment about four times on the bounce. And it'd be great because there was always that suspense. It's like if you're sitting in a bar and somebody rigs the jukebox to play the same song over and over. Once the video finished, there was this little pause and we'd all be like, what's next? And then it'd start again.
The horror. Anyway.
That's question 2A.
That was a fun little segue. Spice Girls and associated pop at the time.
Yeah.
But now, on to, I think it's time for important question number 3.
Okay.
What band or artist defined your teen years?
Easy. We all know what I'm going to say. Yeah. It was the Smiths. 100%. Okay. Yeah, it's... I'm not going to open up. I am going to open up this can of worms. That it's such a problematic issue. Where avoid the beers. I'll just sprinkle a few there and there. I loved them. I became the proper, fully cliched Morrissey idolising teen. Well, it was marvellous at the time, but it's not so marvellous now.
Yeah.
I'll never.
That joke isn't funny anymore.
That was beautiful. That was worth my petrol just that. I will still always love them. They'll still always set off this kind of melancholy, self-deprecating teen in me. But I just can't quite bring myself to listen to them as much anymore.
Yeah.
And then I have the problem with I can't really listen to people doing covers of them either. I don't know if you watch Glastonbury. Johnny Marr did There Is a Light by himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know if this works for me.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work without Morrissey doing it without Marr sort of ish works, but not the other way around. And then the Killers did This Charming Man with Johnny Marr on stage, and no.
I do wonder if there are any bands that Johnny Marr has not played alongside.
Remember when he was in Modest Mouse?
Yes.
Just like out of. Just suddenly, it's like I'm in Modest Mouse now, and I have the other members of Modest Mouse going, "Oh, all right then." he kept turning up to
phone. He does look quite short. He probably just snuck in.
There was a spate of like Facebook pages and Twitter and things all posting photos of the lineups, and all of a sudden Johnny Marr had just sort of been in there.
He was in literally every. I forgot to say everyone, man. But that's.
It was like.
That's some nasty allegations. I'm not going to get into. It's in literally every band.
It was like when people kept photoshopping John Terry into celebration photos.
it was a wild time. But I hear what you're saying. Definitely, it is different because Morrissey has become a bit of a problem. problematic figure. It's
incredibly problematic.
Yeah. But
you have to separate the music from the artist, absolutely.
Especially if it's music that the artist released so long ago. Mm. And it is so long ago.
It's just such a bizarre turnaround, because he always outspoken, but he was at least outspoken in somewhat of an open left way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
it was
to suddenly kind of gamble and then be like, ta-da, I'm a prick now.
I was about to say, he's always been a thorn in everyone's side, but then he's a prick in everyone's side. Well done.
I you had a really good kind of theory about Morrissey's writing while we were at Fuse.
Oh, yeah.
We were at Litchfield Fuse Festival the other week, and this conversation did come up.
It comes up all the time. Anytime someone brings up the Smiths, I start on my little rant about it.
Yeah. But you had a really interesting theory about when Morrissey's songwriting was good versus when it started to pall.
I think it's the idea of artists tempering each other, I think. And looking back, so I think I compared it to Lennon and McCartney, didn't I? When they are together, they make this sort of perfect storm, because the lightness contracts the darkness, and they rein each other in, which is great. It works.
Yeah.
When you don't have one or the other to rein each other in, McCartney becomes a bit bland and crap. Lennon goes a bit batty and Yoko Ono, and they don't make the same stuff. And I think it was the same for Morrissey and Marx. I was having an argument with someone, and they said, oh, well, Mar was the real talent. Like, Smiths wouldn't have been anything without Mar. And I was like, I don't think that's the case. If that was the case, why isn't he really big now? Why is he just in, like, all the different bands?
Yeah,
it's like it, all the rock dads, they go, oh, there's Johnny Mar, look at Johnny Mar. But all the rock kids are like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah,
oh, man, he's playing with my favourite band
now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to join Queens of the Stone Age.
Yes. I think there was an old story. I think I was watching some kind of Talking Heads thing about. Mm. It wasn't about Talking Heads, but it was. It's a kind of show that had like interviews with a lot of artists of that era, and Johnny Marr was talking about how he'd made this perfect riff, this absolutely awesome rock riff, and he took it round to Morrissey to get the lyrics done, because actually that was how he did things. Kind of it worked for them, and then he came back with some girls are bigger than others. And he was just, for fuck's sake. He was so proud of this piece of music.
Yeah.
And then this lyric, oh God.
I mean, it's still a tune.
It is still a tune.
But yeah, you would be massively disappointed.
Oh, Morrissey.
You're expecting,
please, no.
You're expecting a How Soon Is Now. And you got that. It's like, oh.
That's a challenge for us
please
at some point.
Please never do that to me. But, they were the big one. I'll carry on. I think the only one I can think of other than that is the White Stripes.
Yeah,
were massive for me. Yeah, once I'd kind of done my Smiths thing and morosed myself out, I got really heavily into the blues for ages. So I went over to, if you haven't been to the Discory in Birmingham, you should go. You can go some days and find fuck all, and you can go some days and find an absolute beauty. It's like, I think it's the oldest record shop in, one of the oldest record shops in the country. And I went there and was basically like, looking to get into the blues, recommend me things, because I don't know where to start. Sold me a load of vinyl, then kept making me like mixtapes, which was really nice. And from then on, so sort of going through the history of that, I guess I then stumbled across the White Stripes just as they were about to release Elephant. And went back through their early back catalogue, which then linked in perfectly for me with coming from the blues side. They started so much in that way with the kind of garagey, and then moving into the blues. They were a massive, massive influence. I guess they were probably the first thing that started getting me into modern music. And I went through a stage where I only wore red, white and black for about 2 years. Oh, I was that kid.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually. We actually got into the White Stripes at about the same time.
Really?
Yeah. I'd heard, like, odds and sods of them at, like, a club match. They liked them, like...
Fell in Love with a Girl, things like that.
Fell in Love with a Girl, yes. Occasionally Hotel Yorba.
Yes.
I saw the video for Dead Leaves on the Dirty Grounds.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, these are fucking good. So I actually asked my wife for a copy of White Blood Cells.
Oh,
for,
yes,
for Christmas.
Beautiful.
What an album.
What
that
an
is.
Album. It's fantastic.
And then after that, kind of went backwards and then went forwards because
yeah.
Elephant was just about to come out.
Yeah.
Yes, stunning.
I would
stunning
say that
albums.
That was their pinnacle. White Blood Cells and Elephant
yes.
are pretty much faultless. I lost them a little bit going from there. Jack
yeah,
started to
if
do
you thought
a
it was
bit
all
right. weird. It was okay.
It had a couple of good tunes.
Yeah,
it.
But it wasn't as solid as even their first album. It was it was rough at the edges.
Oh,
sounded like
the,
it had been recorded in a garage. I think it had been recorded in a garage.
Yeah.
But it was still track for track pretty damn good.
The first two were little rough as arseholes,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like you say, cracking tune.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a bit more like they were slavishly copying the blues.
Yes.
Whereas
yeah.
you got into White Blood Cells and got a bit more of an indie rock thing.
They'd
but
taken
still
their
the
influence work. And pushed it forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. They're
totally
bringing it to more kind of a modern audience and they made something new and exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Cracking.
Nice.
So, I think we're ready for... do you want to deliver an important question number four, John? I feel like I've been taking over here.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it is, John?
No.
That's making him struggle again.
Yeah.
There we go.
So well, much more fun when John struggles.
Yeah.
See how many times
episode
you can
title.
Say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sit here and drink my Polly's Bruco beverage.
Okay. That was brilliant sipping.
Also, if you drop the name in more, so you get free ones. Because I'm going to start doing
that. Yeah. That's up to Polly's Brewco.
We make excellent beer.
Yeah, my name rot is all right.
Oh no.
Question number four. What is your go-to song when you're having a bad day?
Okay, so I couldn't do this. Just as a side note, I can't do these kind of questions. This is my worst episode.
Ooh.
I take the questions really seriously.
Yeah?
I can't do like Desert Island Disc type things because I get into my head that someone actually is going to take away all the rest of the music.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
What am I going to do? I can't decide. And I get really pressured and really sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't do it. So
about time of year for that.
It's today.
Yeah.
So I tried, whittled it down to five, I think, in the end.
Okay.
That's fine. We can take all five.
Okay,
yes.
I'm going to give you all five.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, second side note, if I'm having a bad day, I'm not the kind of person that will listen. I'm a Smiths girl. I'm not the kind of person who will listen to something to cheer me up.
Yes.
I'll listen to something to continue the sad loop.
Yeah, yeah.
I came up with a very similar answer when I did it myself. I had one for if someone had really pissed me off, in which case it was 99 Problems by Jay-Z.
Nice.
Because that is just, fuck
yes.
you. And then like if it was actually depressed,
yeah,
absolutely the Smiths.
Yeah.
Perfect wallowing music.
Yeah. Well, then interestingly, there is more.
Oh, okay.
On this list of five, so I'll start with, they're in no particular order. I've got Lost on You by LP, which I don't know if anyone knows. I discovered it, and it will come up in a later question.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered it middle of last year because somebody shared a video of her singing it live. There's something about her voice, and there's something about the lyrics. It's the most plaintive, heartbreaking piece of music that I have ever heard in my entire life, and I've listened to it solidly. I've had a lot of sad days.
Mm-hmm.
Over a year and a half, and it's never lost its. So we'll like do a pause in a bit, and I'll get you to listen to it. Also, I'll get you to listen to it because Miley Cyrus and
somebody,
what's his name, the one who did the stuff with Amy Winehouse,
Mark Ronson.
Yeah, they released a track recently, which is a complete and utter ripoff of it. And every time it comes on, I get really angry because no one knows about the original song, and everyone loves the new one. And I'm like, but they're exactly the same. Second, What He Wrote by Laura Marling. I could have put loads of Laura Marling in there, but there's there's something about that one. It's so haunting that it breaks me every single time. Number three, Three Libras by A Perfect Circle. I think the kind of angsty adolescence of the song really gets me. It's got the power and the rockiness that A Perfect Circle have.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of just being sort of blasting your ears with it, it's got this real kind of, I can't think of the word, sort of sadness at not being recognised and anger in that, which is great. And when you want to sort of be a bit like, oh, this person's really upset me. They don't even notice me. It's a great song.
Yeah.
Number four would be River by Joni Mitchell. Got to have some Joni in there. Mm-hmm. She's a beautiful poet.
I was wondering if some Joni would come in. Yeah. I thought you were saying earlier.
Yeah, definitely some Joni. I struggled with that. Really anything off the Blue album could have gone on there, but yeah. River... I think the general feeling of that song, that wanting to escape, is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me on to my number five, which is Wanderer Wandering by Slow Club. So I'm a massive Slow Club fan. And when they released that album, the track at the end is, I guess, all about just feeling a bit lost and about not feeling like you have a place anywhere. And then it ends with a beautiful little segment about depression.
Mm.
And I've never known a song with such a mix of like hopefulness and helplessness at the same time. It's stunning.
Okay.
There we go. I've thought about these.
That was definitely a much more thorough answer than either of us.
Yeah. We might need to re-record ours.
I am feeling just a little disappointed in my own answer.
Yeah.
But, I told you I'd take it seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm wondering now if it's going to take important question number five as seriously.
Yes, I did, but it was a very different one.
Just for the listeners at home, that is the song that you go to when you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm. They're fewer and far between. interestingly, I put the Smiths on here. I put A Rush and a Push, but I actually decided that it was Paint a Vulgar Picture from Strange Ways.
Mm.
On the chord progression and the way that Morrissey's voice soars over those tracks when he sings the bit about in my bedroom in those ugly old houses I dance my legs down to the knees, that is just perfection. And when you're feeling happy, it really reaches you in some like weird little place in your heart. I love it. Then I had one I discovered, well, I was sent last year, never heard anything else by them. I have no interest in hearing anything else by them. It's a song called Fan the Flames by Sheer Mag, and it's just full of summer joy.
Yeah.
It's perfect. I was making a summer playlist and asking people recommendations, and someone chucked that over, and I was like, their song of 2018. What else? Number three, Waiting for the Great Leap Forwards by Billy Bragg. I normally only like Billy for his love songs. I think he's got a really tender way of writing romance. Don't really go so much for his political stuff, but he hits again a nail on the head.
Yes. Joining the queue with the Spice Girls.
Yes, he is. He's just hovering behind. Johnny Marr's in the middle as well.
Yeah. Obviously.
He's only small. He sneaks in.
Can I borrow your hammer?
I think Johnny Marr might actually have been Baby Spice.
Yeah, oh, maybe.
Just like, had a blonde wig.
Yeah.
A little dress.
He could have joined them for the farewell tour when Posh didn't do it.
Yes. I'm not going to sleep at night with that kind of image. Oh, dear.
I'll be awake too, but maybe for different reasons.
Hey,
oh, no.
Does this dress suit me or...
Oh, no. Yeah, so Waiting for the Great Leap Forwards. It's great. It feels like rabble-rousing, but without being too offensive. And then I didn't choose tracks for the last two because I was struggling. Anything off Graceland by Paul Simon is great for a happy day. Absolutely beautiful album. And then anything by Beyonce. I'm a massive, massive Beyonce fan. Geek. I love her.
I'm pickier with me Beyonce. Anything she does is upbeat.
Yep.
I am there for all day long. But some of her more kind of ballady numbers...
Do you not like them?
They leave me cold.
Really? Yeah. Name one. Go on, name and shame.
If I Was a Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Dreadful. Absolutely despise that song. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm not personally offended.
That's good.
But on behalf of the Hive...
Yeah. There's a lynch mob outside.
Yeah. You have to be careful with the
Bay Hive. Do you? I think she's just gone from strength to strength. Like Lemonade on a good day, I could listen to 50 times.
Mm.
I think it's a perfect album. So yeah, she'd be up there on my good days. Plus, she gives me a little bit of sass, which I really enjoy.
Mm.
I'm not usually a sassy person, but if I stick the right Beyonce on, I'm like clicking that. fingers, strutting in.
Smashing windows with baseball bats.
Yes, oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's bring it home then.
Question number 6, which we have confirmed is now all of the questions. What was the last thing you heard and loved?
So, interestingly, Merriman's album.
No?
Loved. And the album that John sent me most recently was the Stella Donnelly one.
Stella Donnelly, yeah.
I really like that.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. She's got this beautiful kind of irreverence about her that I really, really enjoy. And it's beautifully produced.
Mm.
It's great. Really, really nice. Before that was Billie Eilish.
Mm-hmm.
I love her. I absolutely love her. I think she is absolutely batshit. But
sometimes that's what you want out of your artist.
Yeah, exactly. Especially an artist so young. And I respect her, I think, for generally how she holds herself.
Yeah.
She's not... She doesn't shy away from being batshit.
Mm.
But she hasn't gone down the route of selling herself to be... popular. She's not kind of strutting on in Johnny Marr's mini dress.
Put him away, Johnny.
No. Johnny Marr's mini dress is the podcast title. Struggle all you want, Johnny. That's the title.
Yeah.
Oh no, I think she's wonderful, and that's one that almost made the cut on my sad songs. Was When the Party's Over. Fantastic song, fantastic video. Just incredible. And before that was the aforementioned LP, Laura Pergazzoli, I think her last name is. And she was always like a writer, I think, for people. Interestingly, she's also on Morrissey's new album, his covers album. She does it. I haven't listened to it. I'm not going to.
That's got to be conflicted.
It all just comes full circle.
It does. That was the other thing I remember you saying on Whitfield Pews, actually, that his songwriting seemed to kind of go off after he lost his virginity.
Oh, I did say that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also true.
Yeah.
The minute... Yeah,
before that, he came into his own.
Yeah.
John, I was just drinking this delicious Polly's Bruco beer. I almost spat it everywhere.
Horrendous.
Thank you.
But yes, that point does stand.
Yeah,
the minute he got his end away, his songs all seemed to be about sleeping with people. I was like, I don't really care. I don't want to hear about your sex life.
No.
I want you to be sad still.
Yeah.
Be sad with me, and then everything is okay.
I want to hear about you not sleeping with people.
Yeah. You really wanting to, but being frightened to.
Yeah.
Or you really wanting to, but nobody loves you. I resonate with these things.
You're kind of looking for more of a Jarvis Cocker thing at that point.
Certainly
kind of obsession with sex, but also an obsession with not having it.
Yes, but Morrissey was never as sexy as Jarvis is. I have a real thing for Jarvis. He's a creep, but there's something about him. I'm getting flushed.
It's just the right amount of sleazy, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
We're all
blushing now. I totally understand the thought of Jarvis.
And he's here tonight.
I wish.
That's Johnny Marr.
Jarvis Cocker doesn't wear that dress.
Or stilts. I think I've successfully ended the episode, John.
Oh, you may do.
Oh fuck, he's broken. We need to get a new one.
Right.
What's Johnny Marr's number?
I'll be right there. Right, okay, so that's the autophonography.
Oh, but there is one last question if you feel brave enough to answer it.
Oh no, okay.
If you had to.
What are you doing later?
You say it in Jarvis Cocker's voice at the time.
Hang on. I'm going to try. If you had to, and if you could, could you pick one song, or a small selection, given that you hate picking one song,
that defines
you as a person now?
Oh, no.
This is not to say that we're taking all of the music away from you. All the music will still be there.
That's yours.
That's safe.
And your BFH.
No, I can't do it.
You can't do it?
I can't do it. I can't do it. My palms are sweaty.
Yeah, yeah.
Knees weak. Arms are heavy.
Well, that was an unexpected break into Eminem there. That was...
No, give me, you know, a few days and I probably could, but I don't want to pin myself to an answer. It's too important.
Well, we're probably going to be releasing this sometime in 20...
21.
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
Cool. That's well,
optimistic. Just to coincide with the end of the far right.
And probably the 50th Avengers movie.
Yeah. Or you can just put it as like a little note at the end. Emily Finer decided it was this.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the post credit subtitle.
Yeah.
You know when they do like a true life film, and then they just have like a freeze frame of one of the actors in it and go like, "Bobby died in 2004, stapled to a hobo with a bin lid taped to his face."
Perfect.
You have been listening to All Yesterday's Party.
For the first time in a long time in a long time.
The music is by Attack of the Vapors, and the podcast is hosted by Audio Boom.